This is the Tank Podcast for the 14th of October, 2007.
Good morning, Richard.
Good afternoon, Steph.
What a splendid evening we're having here tonight.
This morning.
Here on the Tank.
On the Tank. This is because the Tank is seen worldwide. We never know what time it is where you're watching it or listening to us.
And it doesn't really matter. So you can use any greeting you like here.
Aloha.
No, happy twilight.
Ciao. Guten Tag. We could go on.
Good noon.
We could go on forever. Thank you for joining me again in your studio
tank.
It's
a lovely, lovely place. As you can see, we've moved up in the world. Last year, we were in this cramped little cardboard box.
It was
surrounded
a shoebox size. Terrible.
But now it's palatial.
It's great.
It's a mansion.
It looks impressive with all the things behind us there.
Oh, yeah. I've got a complete set of fake books behind me to make me look intelligent. It's fantastic.
Does it work?
Yeah. No.
No, all right.
But it's great to be here once again in the tank.
And, in the tank.
You got some good stuff this week?
We do. We're going to be talking to Rebecca Watson. Now, Rebecca Watson is known as the Skeptic.
Oh, the Skeptic.
The Skeptic.
I've heard of the Skeptic. I haven't heard of Rebecca, so now we're putting two and two together.
One and the same.
I just know the Skeptic because she's a legend.
She is a legend. And we'll be talking to her soon via video.
Via VOD.
Yeah. But if you're listening to this podcast, don't worry. You can still enjoy it.
Mm, for sure.
But she's a very interesting young
Skeptic.
Like I said, young. Everyone's young to us. Skeptic. She lives in Boston. And she's just recently won a radio competition.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the nature of the contest? Wasn't one of those drink as much water as you can until you die. Wasn't that one, was it?
No, that was the one she did.
Oh, previously.
Previously.
Oh, she came second.
Second. She won a contest to get her own radio show.
Wow.
And it's going to be a skeptical radio show.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And also, just to mention, the last episode we spoke to Jason Cook from GUSF. Yeah. G-U-S-S-F. The Griffith University.
He was fascinating. He was great.
He was great, and we've had such a good response to that. I'm actually going to fly up and talk to their group.
You are not.
I am.
What a jet setter. This Richard guy, I don't know. Last year, he was bumming around, picking up coins off the streets and stuff. But this year, he's just going everywhere on cruises in the Alaska.
Alaska,
cruising
Gold
to the
Coast.
Gold Coast.
What can I say?
What's going on?
I encourage everybody to join the Skeptics. Look at the travel. It's fantastic.
It all happens for you.
Now, I've had some interesting emails from our listeners and viewers. Someone asked how long that we've actually known each other.
Oh,
so,
really? Goodness gracious.
So those are
a tough question.
That's a tough question. Those of you people watching this vodcast, and those of you people listening, you'll just have to imagine. But I'm putting up a photograph now. That's a photograph of you and me in 1990. Can you believe it?
1990?
Yeah.
I wasn't even born in 1990. What are you talking about? How dare you?
We haven't changed a bit, have we?
No, not at all. Not at all.
That's you at the where you used to play the piano.
The piano bar. Actually,
piano
we
bar.
Might even soon be able to dig up a bit of video footage of that, just for a laugh.
That would be fun.
Yeah, I'll see how I can go with that.
So, Steph and I have known each other for about years.
Too long.
Too long.
No, it's been 17 years or so. Yeah, Richard used to... I used to play the piano in this piano bar, and I used to call him Little Dicky back then.
That's right. I'd be looking over the piano.
He'd appear over the piano going, oh, there's...
Play a song, play.
Play a tune, and he used to love the Beatles and stuff. We had a great old time. And you used to do all of origami back then, too.
Even then. Speaking of which, thank you for everybody sending in photographs for our Pegasus competition.
Yes, indeed.
Here are some photographs now. These are great. I mean, people have really gone to some effort to send in some funny photographs. We'll be announcing the winner next episode.
Next episode, yes.
And the winner, of course, receives our lovely autograph.
What a prize.
What a
massive prize.
You lucky people.
An autographed flying pig.
An autographed flying pig.
Pink Floyd wouldn't even do that.
No, they wouldn't.
Oh, look at that. Oh, by the way, did you see the Pink Floyd flying pig in a movie called Children of Men? Have you seen that movie?
I've seen that movie.
That's a crazy movie.
That's a great movie. I'm just trying to remember where the pig is.
Oh, it was just flying outside the window somewhere.
Yeah?
Yeah. There's a dude there with an art gallery or something, and you look outside, there's Pink Floyd's flying pig. So
really?
I think the Pegasus theme's just rolling on through the culture now.
I'll watch that movie again. It was a good movie.
Oh, that was it was awesome.
Yeah, that
that's
was
one of those
really
movies where you think, that really is the kind of future that we're going to have if we continue on our present trends.
But to help us not continue on our present trend, to think
goodness.
Critically and skeptically, I encourage everybody to go to the Australian newspaper website, and I think
yeah.
that's Australian.com.au?
Or the Australian.com.au.
The Australian. You can Google The Australian. It's a newspaper.
Newspaper, yeah.
And Barry Williams, the chief executive of Australian Skeptics, has a blog.
Oh, really?
Has a blog on the Australian site. I'm putting up the URL now. Right, there it is.
Do they give him a bit of a print stuff as well, a bit of a hearing in the print version?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. But if you go to that site, to the Australian, and just search for Barry Williams or blog or Skeptics, yeah, you should find it. Please have a look and comment.
Excellent.
We're after comment to the blogs he writes on every week.
Get that Skeptic Network happening.
Get that Skeptic Network happening. Okay, we're going to be happening right now. We're going to fade away.
Ooh.
Fade out of the tank for a little while.
Magically, of course.
And we'll be talking to Rebecca Watson.
We certainly will. Looking forward to that.
And you'll see and hear us at the end of the show.
Oh, yeah.
The Skeptic, the Journal of Australian Skeptics, now in its 27th year, reports and stories by leading journalists, scientists and thinkers from around the world. You can subscribe to The Skeptic for just $44 a year or $120 for 3 years. Subscribe by www.skeptics.com.au or call The Skeptic's hotline on Sydney 02-9417-2071. The Skeptic. I happen to have a copy right here. Let me have a look. Editorial, The Importance of Skepticism. Oh, yeah. And then we've got Around the Traps. This is sort of news from around the country. Oh, here's a story by Karen Stolzno, The Palm Reader of New Orleans. That looks interesting. Teaching Skepticism, Philosophy and Critical Thinking Forum. It just goes on and on and on. What's this one? Oh, look, I'm just going to go away and read this now, and I'll let you get on with the rest of the show. That's very interesting. Rebecca Watson from Boston, Massachusetts, runs the skeptchick.org website that's dedicated to communicating science and critical thinking to the general public. She is also the co-host of the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast, available weekly. I spoke to Rebecca Watson via video Skype. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, Richard.
Great to have you as our first video guest on the Tank podcast.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
That's fantastic.
In Australia.
And around the world, of course. Hopefully.
Oh, okay.
People are watching and listening to this around the world. Now, I've got some questions. Of course, you're known as the Skeptic. I mean, you're getting pretty famous, known as the Skeptic. What possessed you to be called the Skeptic?
Well, I don't think I ever called myself the Skeptic. I think other people sort of applied that to me because I got the website, skeptic.org, and that's what I work off of. And I always try to correct people when they call me the Skeptic. You know, there are a lot of us. There are a lot of skeptics, and I am just one of many. So I'm not the Skeptic.
Oh, well, to us, you're the Skeptic. I mean, but originally, I'd like to know, and I usually ask this question of people, how did you get started in skepticism and science?
Well, I got started, about 4 years ago. I used to be a magician, first of all.
Okay.
And I was a big fan of Penn and Teller, and through them I found James Randi, and I was a fan of his magic. And then I found out about what he's doing these days, which is, of course, investigating paranormal claims. And I've always had this fascination with con men and as well as myths and the paranormal. It's always interested me. So it was pretty natural, actually, to find what he was doing, what Randy's doing now, and stumble across his website, read all of his commentaries, listen to his old radio show. I just became kind of obsessed with all of that. But it wasn't until 2004 when I decided one day to go on to Randy's online message board. And that's when I got hooked, because that's when I started really interacting with other skeptics and realizing that, you know, you can apply the term skeptic to yourself and that means something.
Yeah.
And that you can actually do something about it. So that's kind of how I got embroiled in the whole thing.
So once again, it seems that James Randi was the start of someone else's career in skepticism.
Yeah, I'm definitely not unique in that regard.
We've certainly heard this story many times. Apart from James Randi, and you mentioned Penn and Teller, do you have other role models in skepticism?
Well, there's that Richard Saunders guy. He's pretty good.
Mm. No, don't listen to him, whatever you do.
all the classics. I think the first skeptical book I picked up was Demon Haunted World.
Oh,
by
yeah.
Sagan.
Yeah, absolutely.
That completely changed my life, because I was already kind of getting into the skepticism and all that, but that was the first book I ever read that really made science sort of apply to my everyday life and made it crystal clear and relevant and inspiring. It was a really inspiring book.
In fact, I think I have one. If I just reach over to my bookshelf here.
This is going to be great for the people listening on the podcast.
Great for people listening in on the podcast.
And actually, I think, can you see my bookshelf behind me? I think I have it as well. Yeah, right here. Different copy.
Different cover. Look at that.
Let's see what else we've got. Actually, Richard Feynman is another huge influence. I found out about him after Sagan, and I read Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman. And, I mean, just to read about someone who loved science so much, and he was so curious about the world, that was another just really inspiring thing to read. And he completely transforms the idea that a scientist is some stodgy guy who's sitting in a lab somewhere completely disconnected from the world.
Now, Rebecca, getting back to your interesting career, can you please tell me whose idea was the calendar, the famous calendar?
The calendar. I wish I could say it's my idea, but it wasn't. I think the idea of a skeptic calendar has been floating around since the beginning of internet time, which is 2001 sometime. There was always a running joke. Like, I showed up on the JREF forum 2004, and I heard about, you know, people would joke, you know, you girls should put together a calendar. How much fun would that be? And we had a separate women-only forum, little private secret thing. And one of the girls in there said, we should do it. I think it would be fun. And then we could sell it or something and, you know, give the profits to the JREF, I don't know, something like that. So we all said, yeah, sure, why not? We'll just do it for fun. And so we started doing it, but then we were doing it by committee. So we were taking votes on, you know, whether it should be black and white or color, things like that. It wasn't getting anywhere. Mm. So I said, you know, this project needs a dictator. So I'm just going to, I need a project. So I'll take it over. So I did, and it worked out really well. I pushed it through. We got 12 girls to take it off for skepticism.
including yourself, of course.
Of course.
Of course. And now you're known internationally as a nudist. Is that right? Something like that?
Yeah, that's something. Well, I guess it's all kind of related. I have a big following among nudists, apparently, because on MySpace, some nudist added me and put me in her top 8. And I guess she puts out this nudist newsletter or something. And other nudists saw my picture there and assumed that I was a nudist and then sent me a friend request. And then they started asking me to write articles for their nudist newsletters. And, and finally, I had to say, you know, okay, hey, everybody, not a nudist. Sorry. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just not a nudist. And then that made them all very angry, because then it's what's wrong with being a nudist.
Oh, dear.
It's been a big ordeal.
But how do you get to choose who ends up in the calendar? And there's a bloke's one, a men's one too.
There is. There's one for men and one for women now. I have open applications. Anybody can apply to be in the calendar. And I choose based upon your experience. You know, I give higher priority to the scientists or the skeptics who are out there really doing something, people who are starting their own organizations or who have done something cool. And I don't know, I try to get as many people in there as I can. So we always end up having a great group of people.
I really like the calendars. I think the photography is fantastic, and I nearly fell off my chair when I saw the one of Phil Plait. I really did.
Phil's is a favorite, and it's October right now, so Phil and I are hanging on hundreds of walls as we speak.
I like Phil Plait, reaching for the stars. He's great. Now, tell me, being a female skeptic, I mean, do you think you have a harder job to do than being a male skeptic? Are people more surprised that a young female should be skeptical?
I don't think I have a harder job, really. I have a slightly different appeal, and I have a different audience, but I don't think it makes my job any harder. I've always been the sort of person who didn't really care if I'm the only girl on the baseball team, or, you know, I was the only girl in my magic shop for a long time. And
oh, wow.
I'm kind of used to it, and I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's the only reason why it might be harder is because I have more opportunities because people aren't used to seeing a woman and, you know, in the skeptical community and so visible. So I think that actually gives me more opportunity to kind of put myself out there and to get things done, which
that's a good point.
Good.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way. It would give you certain notoriety, I guess. Now,
you think of a guy in my position, he's going to have a lot more, he's going to have a lot harder time getting recognized and getting noticed and putting himself out there because he's just one of, you know, dozens of other, say, old white guys who are out there doing it, you know. So I think it actually gives me a leg up in that regard.
Okay. Now, you, of course, take part in a very popular podcast called The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, which is heard all around the world by thousands and thousands and thousands of people. I know, because I was recently a guest on your show, and I've been getting emails from all around the world simply because I was a guest. How did you end up being one of the panel?
I lucked out. I contacted the guys because the podcast is produced by the New England Skeptical Society. And I called them to find out, or I emailed Steve actually to find out if they were meeting in Boston at all, because I wanted to get involved with that. Steve responded and said, sadly, we aren't, but, oh, hey, you have that website and the calendars, and do you want to come on our podcast?
Wow.
I had never actually heard the podcast before because I didn't listen to any podcasts. So I said, sure, what's a podcast? And they explained the idea to me, called me up, and we did an interview, and then they kept me on for the rest of the show. We had such a good time, and we all just sort of meshed to the point where they called me within a few days and asked, you know, do you want to maybe come back again sometime? Like, next week?
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was kind of addictive after that. It was a lot of fun.
Now, of course, I guess it must have been somewhat of an addiction for you because you've just launched yourself recently into a radio competition, and you are very successful, I'm delighted to say. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, a few months ago, a guy who listens to the podcast and I had met at a previous Amazing Meetings in Las Vegas, Randy's conference, he emailed me to say there's this contest that is being put on by a public radio corporation, and I think you'd be perfect for it. They're looking for new talent, new hosts. And I took a look. All you had to do was upload a 60-second introduction to yourself, and it was free. So I put it off and put it off, and the very last day the entries were due, I thought, well, I might as well. So I did, and I didn't really publicize it that much. I think I mentioned it on my blog and on the JREF forum that, you know, I'm in this contest. Maybe you guys could go vote.
Yes.
Apparently what happened was everybody went and voted, and I won the most popular vote. Judges chose 9 contestants, and one person made it through by popular vote, which ended up being me. And that was out of about 1,400 entries.
Wow.
So, yeah, from there, we completed different challenges through five rounds, I guess, whittling it down until there were three of us left, and all three of us won $10,000.
Nice.
Although we have to spend it on producing a pilot radio show.
Really? I've got a great idea. You can spend some of that money on an airfare to Australia, come and interview me.
That's not bad. Although I think that would take up the entire prize money.
It might, yes.
Yeah, but it'd be fun.
So what are your hopes for the future of that?
Well, I'm working with the producer right now, and we're hammering out the details of what the show is going to look like and what's going to happen. And in the best of all possible worlds, what will happen is I will pitch it to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. They're the guys with all the money. They'll say, wow, that's amazing. We love you. Here, money, money. And I will take all that money. I will stuff it in my pockets and I'll run away. No. I'll take that money and I will begin producing a regular radio show. It'll probably be monthly, say an hour a month or an hour a week.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be amazingly cool. But yeah, I think it'd just be a really fun, cool way to get critical thinking out there.
That is really good, and I know lots of people in the skeptical world are really looking forward to that. Speaking of which, do you get much fan mail?
I do. I get a lot of, yeah, and I try to respond to as much of it as I can, but it gets kind of difficult. I mean, I get 10 or 20 from you alone every day. I mean, stop it.
No, it's only begging you to go easy with me in Scrabble, that's all.
That's true. Richard and I, for those of you out there who don't know, which is probably all of you, Richard and I play an online Scrabble game, and what's our record? 6-0?
6-0? Yeah, you're doing okay. You're doing okay.
But yeah, I get fan mail, I get love letters, I get hate mail, I get the whole spectrum. I guess it comes with the territory.
Well, that's good. So you do get hate mail. I get hate mail. I think we all get hate mail from time to time, which is a pity, but I guess it means we're being noticed.
Yeah, it happens. You know, if everybody loved me, I feel like I would not have been doing my job.
You're doing the wrong thing if that's the case. Do you have any other plans for any other media adventures? Television, maybe?
I would love to break into television. That would be very cool, but that's kind of a distant plan.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'll conquer radio first and then move to TV. Because, you know, for radio, I don't need to worry about makeup and losing weight or anything like that.
Apart from video interviews like this, of course.
Right. But, you know. I'm hoping that the resolution is bad and I'll be all, you know, jerky and everything. So it really won't be so bad.
So if there are any TV producers out there watching this VOD podcast, there she is, ready to
Here
go.
I am. Especially TV producers in Australia, because then I can come and see Australia. I won't spend my prize money.
That's the way.
I can interview you.
We could try that. Finally, Rebecca, I'm hopefully going to be going to the next James Randi Amazing Meeting, which is in Las Vegas in June, I think. What can I look forward to seeing there?
Oh, man. Amazing meetings are the best. Well, you were already on the Amazing Adventure to Alaska.
That was pretty good.
That was fun, but that's just a teeny tiny little taste of what an amazing meeting is all about. It is such a blast. Last year, it was nonstop, brilliant speakers. And the best thing is after they speak, you know, a lot of times you get to just sort of hang out with people. You'll find them at lunch. Carolyn Porco cut in front of me at lunch one year. And it was just like, hey, get out of here. Wait a minute. I know you. You were just speaking and it was amazing. Okay, let's talk.
You run a party at the Amazing Meeting or something like that?
Yes. Back in January, I threw a huge party. I rented out a two-bedroom suite at the hotel where the conference was, and I invited everybody. posted the room number everywhere. And the greatest thing is that for the podcast, we interviewed just about every speaker. So after the interview, I would be talking to them and say, oh, by the way, I'm having this party tonight. If you feel like stopping by. And the great thing is that a lot of them took me up on it. So Christopher Hitchens stopped by. My buddy Sam was behind the bar pouring shots for Hitchens. He's like, this is my dream come true. It was a lot of fun. We had the guys from Reason Magazine and Richard Wiseman, you know, and it's just, that's what it is nonstop. It's a great big party with brilliant people where you can talk, you can drink, you can laugh. It's so much fun.
It sounds almost too good to be true, doesn't it?
It does. you'll need to come and skeptically investigate it to
I
find
will.
Out if it's too good to be true.
I have to make sure. Now, if people
I'm
want
excited.
To...
I can't wait to see
it. If people want
For real,
to...
like in flesh.
Yes. Instead of this strange internet sort of conferencing.
Right.
If people want to contact you, Rebecca, what's the best way they can do that to send you love mail or hate mail or indifferent mail or anything like that?
Love letters they can send to skeptchick@skeptchick.org.
Okay.
And that address is also, if you just go to skeptchick.org, you'll see the blog. We update the blog every day, and I have a number of brilliant women who are helping me with that. We give you all the latest news and skepticism, lots of fun stuff on there. So you can contact me through that.
Rebecca Watson, the skeptic, or a skeptic, certainly the most prominent skeptic. Thank you very much for appearing on The Tank.
Thank you, Richard.
Oh, sorry.
Wasn't
that a fascinating show?
That was a great show.
What a great interview. She's a really inspirational girl.
And for those people watching, I think the interesting way it worked there, doing the video conferencing.
Yeah.
With Skype these
days.
What
you can do now is just fabulous. And you know, and it's all due to magical beliefs, because someone had a magical belief that you could create an internet.
Yes.
And they meditated.
Yes.
And they prayed.
Yes.
And it happened. And we're just celebrating that wonderful technology.
Are you saying we've been on the wrong track for all these years?
We have. Yeah, the skeptics are just, the science is just wrong. Yeah, this camera we're looking at now is a manifestation of a belief in magic. And here we are. We're experiencing it. It's wonderful.
Viewers and listeners are invited to write to Stefan.
to discuss
this point.
Yes, in detail. Yes.
Now, if you do want to write to Stefan, here's the address. There we are.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
cosmicspoon@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. All corresponds to the Tank podcast, goes through cosmicspoon@gmail.com.
Yes.
Photographs of your Pegasus or comments or anything you like.
Anything at all. And in fact, thank you for all the people that have been communicating, because sometimes this old YouTube-y kind of webby video thing, you think occasionally nothing's happening, but you find out that people are actually watching and enjoying it and getting involved and getting engaged, visiting the website. That's fantastic.
We're getting many hits. And if you feel like you want to respond with a video response, you can do that via the YouTube.
Go for it.
We'd be happy to see it.
Let's see a spoon bending. Let's see a bit of some psychic activity. That'd be nice. It makes something disappear magically. Like we're just about to.
We're about to disappear ourselves. Thank you, Stefan. I'll see you in a couple of weeks back in the tank.
It's been fantastic.
Cheers.
You have been listening to The Tank Podcast. Produced in sunny Sydney, Australia by the Mystery Investigators, the Sirius Media Group, and Australian Skeptics. You can email us at cosmicspoon@gmail.com.